This is Diane Mattis, Steve's little sister. You are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for September 5th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Rainbow Mosquito.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. It is the day after Labor Day. Summer is over. No more white pants.
I can still wear my Birkies, man, can I?
I think you do. You wear your Birkenstocks all winter, don't you?
Of course. Of course, man. That's the way we're going to do things.
Okay.
It's going to be a spiritual type of show today, man.
This is a surreal episode of Too Much Scrolling, so buckle in, folks.
Oh, it's going to be exciting.
Especially our new executive producer, Hillary Hamilton. We want to welcome her. She is a supporter of the show. And
warm spirit, man. She's a warm spirit.
Yeah. We sent her a bumper sticker. She's going to be driving around with her car saying that she's listening to Too Much Scrolling. You can join her by becoming a patron on our Patreon page, patreon.com/too much scrolling. And thank you for all your support. Thanks, Hillary.
Oh, thank you, Hillary.
Yeah. This is amazing.
This is exciting.
The internet is fantastic.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And Chip, I have completed the 18-hour journey that is Twin Peaks: The Return.
This is the Appalachian Trail of shows, because it's 18 episodes.
I had a lot of coffee, a lot of cherry pie, and now I know the answer to all of the questions that was proposed 18 hours ago.
Yeah, but the real challenge is do you know the question, man?
I'm not sure what the question was anymore. I forgot what the question was 18 hours later, I think.
So let's get back to the structure of this.
Mm-hmm.
The skeleton of this show, that's this esoteric arts, I don't know, art department show.
Yes.
Experimental
maybe is the right word.
That we probably don't know anything about.
But well, let's go back to 1990 real quick.
Give me who our main characters are.
In 1990, America was asking the question, who killed Laura Palmer?
Who is Laura Palmer?
Laura Palmer was the homecoming queen in this small town of Twin Peaks. She winds up dead,
a gentle snowflake,
wrapped in plastic on the side by the lake, body of water of some sort down the river.
And okay, but we know that's true.
That is the first moment of the first episode of Twin Peaks back in 1990.
So we know that's part of the show. And then,
so we know that happened.
Okay, so we also have our star,
uh-huh,
who we follow.
This is Kyle MacLachlan, Agent Dale Cooper, who rides into town, the FBI agent, coming into town to solve this murder.
All right, so what did we learn, say, season one and season two?
So season one, it's all about who killed Laura Palmer. There's all sorts of articles. TV Guide is all over this. This is big news in the 1990s. Millions of people watched this show.
And this is kind of hazy, surreal as it's being presented to you.
It did have a certain flavor to it that a certain David Lynch applied to 1990s TV. He was telling a story that was kind of like a soap opera. He was making fun of, he was satirizing soap operas as a genre.
All right, so as of season two, did we get some kind of, did it conclude? Did we get sort of what was going on?
Yes. Season two, in the middle of season two, ABC told David Lynch that he had to solve the mystery of who killed Laura Palmer. So we get an answer to that mystery in the middle of season two in 1991.
So how did that work out? What happened?
Should I spoil? Sure. Can I spoil a show from 1991?
Yes, go ahead and spoil it.
Okay, so her father killed her.
Okay.
After he brutally raped her over and over and over and over again. Welcome to ABC television.
Steve, that doesn't sound very fun.
It was not very fun. It's brutal. This is a show about brutality. It's a show about murder. It's small town secrets that become awful endings for characters.
And Twin Peaks is the name of the location of this town.
That is the name of the town.
All right. So now that they revealed that, where did the show go from there?
Yeah, they made up something. They made up a whole nother mystery with a whole nother character that was introduced and exposed the weaknesses of telling a story in a David Lynch lifestyle without David Lynch. David Lynch actually left the show and was not a part of season two, and it really did not feel the same. This was really corporate-driven ABC telling somebody this is how this should go for TV.
Did it continue with the artistic surrealness of it?
They tried. They really truly tried.
And what I mean by that is the story telling is non sequitur, and it just, nothing is like this happened and then this happened and this happened.
And then it's explained. Yeah, yes. That's not the storytelling style of David Lynch. And there was a little bit of that with all of the other people who were producing the show in season two. He came back at the very end. He wrapped up the story as well as he could, you know, explaining some of the things that he liked and didn't like that the others put into his program.
Okay.
And season two ended in 1991 with a huge cliffhanger.
What was that?
Because Agent Dale Cooper was not himself. He was trapped in a surreal other world, another place, an evil lodge. And there was a doppelganger of Cooper who then was sent back to our world.
And this is where the listener says, of course.
Of course. This is very clear. 1991, this happened.
Okay.
Laura Palmer, in that other place, says to Agent Cooper, I'll see you again in 25 years.
And so at that point, in between the second season in 25 years, mm-hmm. there was a movie, right?
There was a prequel movie, Fire Walk With Me, in which David Lynch made a David Lynch story and was able to tell these non sequitur surreal things about the life of this character, Laura Palmer.
We're using these words a lot to sort of give this sort of dreamy way of presenting a story.
Dreams are certainly prominent in this. There are so many dreams in Twin Peaks. This idea of finding information through other sources, finding knowledge.
So what did we
from
learn
other some other plane?
What did we learn in the movie?
In the movie, we learn that Laura Palmer had an awful life. She was really heavily into drugs, way more than we knew about when the show was on ABC.
So initially, she came across as a very angelic,
beautiful,
a prom queen,
very popular.
And then we learned that she had this alter ego life.
Yeah, she was mixed up in prostitution. Okay. She was doing all sorts of things that were outside of what we expected from her character.
Okay.
And knowing that her father was this murderer played into this knowledge and seeing how bad it really got for her before her murder.
Now, did this wrap up the story at that point?
It did. Fire Walk With Me really did wrap up the story up till that point. Okay. But because it was a prequel, we still had the strings of Agent Cooper is in this Black Lodge while his doppelganger is here on Earth.
All right, so 25 years later.
So 25 years later.
Showtime agrees to 9 shows.
Correct. David Lynch says, I can't do it in 9 shows. David Lynch quits and says, I'm not going to do it. You can do the show without me, because you saw how well that worked out in season 2. And Showtime goes, fine, we'll let you do 18 hours of this story.
So now that you've walked 18 hours, did it need to be 18 hours?
That is a very complex question. The space that was given in that 18 hours allowed for so many feelings, so many character ideas to happen, so many surreal moments, specifically episode 8. For those of you who have been watching this at all, episode 8 was a real turning point. It was almost a full hour with no development of the story. But
that sounds appealing.
Well, it was complex at the time, but we've come to love it as a community. We've come to love episode 8. Episode 8 certainly did play into that artistic, what can we do with this medium?
Okay. So at the end of season 2, we've got our character who's trapped over on another plane, a parallel universe.
Right.
This season starts at Showtime.
Exactly at the moment where it left off 25 years before.
And now he's back.
And now he comes back. And unfortunately, he does not... And unfortunately, he does not come back as himself. He comes back as another character named Dougie Jones. Dougie Jones, who looks like Agent Cooper, but is not Agent Cooper, is walking through his life about 13 hours of this show, not being able to communicate. He can only say the last few words that somebody else has said to him. This is very frustrating to the audience.
This is very frustrating to the audience.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Jackpots.
All right. So the story is his becoming aware of who he was?
That is the return of Twin Peaks, the return. It is the return of Agent Cooper to Twin Peaks. He gets to be himself in hour 16 and gets...
So he readopts the Agent Cooper...
Instantly. In a moment. From one moment to the next, he is again our Agent Cooper. And we as a community of people...
And before then, there was another Agent Cooper... running around.
There was a Dale Cooper who was at this point not a federal agent because he's doing such evil things. He's been running around for 25 years.
But he looked the same as...
Correct. It's the same actor.
Except for he had a beard.
No, they went with long hair instead of a beard, but it's the same idea. Kyle MacLachlan absolutely needs to get an Emmy award for his work on this program.
Okay.
He played three, maybe four, maybe five, depending on how you look at things, different characters in the show, and we, the audience, really the difference.
You knew the difference.
So Very much.
They were distinct characters.
Absolutely.
All right, so it wasn't you were watching scenes and going, which one is this?
Yeah, they didn't go for that trope where there's two characters played by the same actor in a fist fight or anything like that. These were very, very distinct characters.
All right, so let's get us all the way up. He comes back at the beginning of the season. Now we've gone through this 17 hours of surrealness.
Uh-huh.
And what's the revelation?
At the end of hour 17, we wrap up a lot of the questions. Not all of the questions, certainly. There are still a lot of people on the internet who are very angry about their question not being wrapped up. Okay. But they wrap up quite a bit of the story at the end of hour 17. Then hour 18 begins. And
what was wrapped up at the end of 17? Why he went to the parallel universe? The multi-universe?
The evil... is destroyed at the end of hour 17.
Okay.
All of the incarnations of evil, possibly with the exception of one of the incarnations, all of the evil has been destroyed. Good has won. They're all back together in the same room. There's these pictures of all of these characters that we've come to love, all standing together, huddled together. They've won. It's over.
So at this point, it's not as surreal.
it remains quite surreal because over that photo of all these people is superimposed a face of Agent Cooper, a giant screen-filling face of Agent Cooper, transparent but still there.
Well, there you go.
And then hour 18 begins, and the things that happen are inexplicable. The story is flipped on its head, and the things that happen have nothing, virtually nothing to do with what has happened in the last 17 hours.
So what was the purpose of it?
Well, a lot of people say that this might be the first episode of a new series. This might be series 4, where we now have a character played by Kyle MacLachlan and a character played by Cheryl Lee with two different names who are doing very different things from what they did in any of their previous incarnations. And this could be a very interesting story that could potentially be told.
So I'm going to get back to this is sort of mind altering.
Yes.
And it kind of plays with your head a little bit, man.
It does. There's certainly, again, back to the internet. I've been a part of two really good Facebook groups for this entire 3 months, mm-hmm. and we have been dissecting and talking about all of the things that we see on the screen, and there are some moments that are really messing with your head, man.
So this is sort of, if I could say a type of person would like this, Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem may enjoy this.
Yes.
Andy Warhol probably would like this.
Andy Kaufman.
Yeah. Salvador Dali.
Oh, yeah. This is definitely surrealism. This is definitely theater of the absurd. Those of you who have never studied theater of the absurd, the idea here, I think, is David Lynch is telling us a story about us through the mirror of these characters from Twin Peaks. And we can see how thinking works if we are willing to go on this ride with him.
It's a shared experience, man.
It is a shared experience. And I've enjoyed all of the shared experience.
We're one, aren't we?
We are. And Facebook has certainly changed this. You know, for 25 years between series, we didn't have Facebook for a lot of that time.
It's that ability to be connected to a large yes. group of people is wonderful in yes. the sense that you have a shared community. And when things are going well and when things don't go well, it's a way to pile on. It's and just the never ending
negativity. Yes. Just a huge amount of negativity. There, we had both of those on Sunday night. And I appreciate the thing that was Twin Peaks, and I hope that it does not continue. I hope that this is the end of this journey. I think that he has set up...
We're one, man. We're one.
I think that David Lynch has set up some fan fiction can certainly come from this new sure. situation that he's handed us in the last 40 minutes of this 18-hour journey.
Kind of like Twilight.
Well, yes, it could lead to Twilight, that's for sure.
The lichens, man.
There's a lot of potential here. Doctor Who has found the potential of audio dramas. They're making these audio dramas that happen in between the TV show episodes, and they are making some great stories that way. I think this could happen with Twin Peaks. There's a lot of creative people out there who could do a lot of creative things with these tools that David Lynch has handed us. So to wrap it up, 30 minutes later, this is weird. This is frustrating. This is complicated. And I think it might be a mirror for life. It's weird. It's frustrating. It's complicated. But if you stick with it, you might be able to figure out something.
18 hours, baby.
18 hours.
All right. That's not the only thing you saw, Steve.
I also got a chance to finally see the Riff Trax version of Mothra.
Mothra?
Mothra is one of those famous kaiju films, one of those big, big monsters coming to attack Japan. This came out in 1961, 5 years after the original Godzilla.
They refer to this in the Book of Mormon.
Yeah,
in the musical.
in the musical, not in the actual Book of Mormon. Okay.
In the musical, when the kids get sent, they learn where they're going.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, "You're going to Japan." He goes, "Oh, Mothra."
Mothra. Mothra is a fun story. 1960s, definitely classic. And watching it with Riff Trax is great. The boys at Riff Trax did this one live a couple of summers ago, and they did not get the rights to distribute it. So they re-recorded a new Riff Trax, and you can now get that on their website, rifftrax.com. I love it. I love it. I love kaiju films, as stupid as they are.
Kaiju films would be things like Godzilla, yes. King Kong?
Big monster, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, you just wait for the King Kong that was in Skull Island to meet up with the Godzilla, because there's a team-up coming up in the next couple of years.
Of course there is. Oh, why would there not be?
Because that's the structure of the kaiju films, is you team up these monsters, and they come and destroy Japan again. You got a chance to see a movie called Ragnarok, and you thought that this was gonna really get you ready for Thor, and
cue the Led Zeppelin song,
all the Norse mythology that you love so much, all wrapped all right. up into this movie.
And so we end up. Well, first of all, I'm not an expert in it. That's the whole point.
But you love it.
But I know I'm learning it, and I don't know. I just the first scene of this is you got these Norse people from olden times heading off, and it looks like they're going on this adventure. So I'm thinking Lord of the Rings-ish. And by the way, there's subtitles, because, you know, why wouldn't I watch this?
Because this is Norwegian. This is a Norwegian film that you watch with English subtitles.
And the budget is there to prove it.
Okay.
And the budget's there. So this is actually, it doesn't come across as a cheap film.
Okay.
But this is certainly not blockbuster level from Hollywood.
Okay.
This is sort of Indiana Jones-ish, because like where it starts off, I'm thinking Lord of the Rings-ish. And then here we go, and we go to, you know, we got Indiana Jones, or our Norwegian counterpart of that. And anyway, they need to get funding, Steve. Mm-hmm. And so he's giving a speech, and somebody, it's not going real well. So then he brings out his little book of notes on Ragnarok, and immediately... it gets into esoteric area. So, man, this is like the second thing we're talking about, man, that goes esoteric.
So he's like a Sasquatch hunter at this point. He's telling these stories that nobody's believing? Or no, how does this go?
Ragnarok's where the gods fought, the end of the gods, and before the next age.
Okay.
So there's this, just think of mythology, classic. This is the classic ending.
He's going into
before
that.
The rebirth.
Gotcha.
And then he's saying, well, I've got all these notes from all this stuff, and I've got all this, I want to do this research. And immediately the big patrons say, well, if you're going to waste your money on this, then I'm out of here, and pulling the funding. And so his gentleman, who is his boss, says, hey, listen, we won't pay for research anymore. You're going to be a guide from now on. Yeah,
you're like, no longer an archaeologist. You are bumped down to guide.
So now we have mom has passed away. Daughter and son are kind of angry that they don't get to go to Spain for their vacation because dad's going to go up to northern Norway, which, of course, is a dream for vacation.
It's like Wisconsin.
It's... But higher up in
even colder. Even colder than Wisconsin, if there is such a thing.
Anyway, they head on up there, and their journey begins. They're going to go off to this special place. They get to an island, and the island is... This is where there's going to be a lot of good stories on this. Because we use a lot of Nazi stuff from the 1940s and...
Back
and
all to Indiana Jones.
All those esoteric things that... Yeah, supposedly Hitler sent all of his minions off to go bring us back, you know, this...
mystical objects.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so anyway, they have to cut through this fence to be able to get over to the other side. That's the former Soviet Union. That's Russia.
Crossing the line.
That Russia doesn't have the resources to be able to defend anymore, and they don't really have to defend it. Because
the Norwegians are not really going to... invade. Yeah,
exactly. So anyway, they slip through, and what do they find? They find all the Soviet stuff that has been abandoned, and you know, there was some kind of base there, and basically they were to watch out for that area. I did not realize this when I started watching this movie at all, that this is a monster movie.
Oh, nice.
I didn't know it at the time.
Okay.
And the monster is, you know,
CGI.
Certainly not the highest quality.
Okay.
And it's the classic, you've taken my baby type story.
Okay.
And we've got to come and get it. Yes, it is. Actually, it's kind of interesting. I don't think this is a bad film. Okay. I don't think this is a great film. This is 50 out of 100.
50-50. All right. I'll take that.
So I don't mind that. But anyway, if you have interest in this and sort of an Indiana Jones-ish film with subtitles filmed in Norway... This would be for you.
There's a list of people who will watch this film.
There's a subculture, Steve.
Is it Norwegian? Yes. Is it got subtitles? Yes. Is it about a monster? I'm in.
Well, for our Scandi and our Finnish people, you know, you're going to love this.
There you go. It's called Ragnarok. Opening this week. Oh, Chip. We finally made it. It is here.
Stephen King's got to be proud.
Stephen King is proud. The movie version, the new movie version of Stephen King's It is hitting theaters this week. And there was an interview that I read that Stephen King said it is scarier than he expected it to be.
This is sort of the E.T. of scary movies.
The E.T. Explain that for me.
There's kids. There's kids involved.
There's a lot of scary movies with kids.
Yes.
This one, well... Boy, are the kids ever in danger. Those of you who have never read it, first of all, what are you doing with your lives? Secondly,
I have never read it.
You've never read it?
No.
Oh, I've read it, and I watched it. I rented it. And then Were you scared? I called the video store and said, do you have it? And they said, yes, we have it. And I said, can you hold it? And then I went and got it. And then I watched it. But then I had to rewind it because it was on VHS. I'm so glad that it is back. I can tell all these jokes again. I haven't been able to do this since the 90s.
This is rated R. Just tell you, this is not for that.
This is true horror. The first version of it was a miniseries on TV.
It was.
And it was scary, but it was very TV miniseries.
Okay. And this had Tim Curry.
That was Tim Curry as Pennywise the clown. Yes.
Yes.
The new Pennywise is one of the Skarsgårds.
Skarsgård.
Because everybody's a Skarsgård at this point. And it looks terrifying. I look forward to seeing it. The interesting fact is they have split this story in two. We're going to get the first half of this story in this movie. The old, when the kids are children part of the story is being told here.
Really?
And then we will get the second half when they are adults in another movie.
Really? Yes. I did not know that. So this is a two-parter.
This is a two-parter. They've this split is the prequel. This story. Yes. I look forward to this. I love it. It is scary. I will go see it probably in the theater, probably with my hands over my eyes, because it is truly frightening.
Steve, not everyone likes horror films. Give us some more.
Oh, there's the adorable, the always effervescent Reese Witherspoon. She has a new movie called Home Again. She's just adorable, and she's divorced, and she's got all these boyfriends, and then her husband shows up, and she's got adorable kids, and it's an adorable story.
Okay.
It looks fun.
Steve, if there was a film that we probably want to avoid this week, what would that be?
It. No.
No, we're going to go see It.
I will go see It. What I probably will not give my money to is the studio that made a movie called 9/11. It is, of
Steve,
course...
Steve, it's got Charlie Sheen.
And Whoopi Goldberg.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, it is, of course...
It's about 9/11.
The anniversary of September 11th is coming up this week, and I have a personal problem with making money off of this tragedy.
This takes place in one of the towers, Steve.
In an elevator in the North Tower. Yeah.
This is certainly not something inspiring.
Yeah.
I won't see this.
I will not give this company money. I will not see this film. I have no desire to relive that moment. That moment was real. Even though we weren't in New York, even though we weren't in immediate danger on that day, the feelings were real.
Well, we were in immediate danger. Yeah. If you were in the Sears Tower at the time, the Willis Tower, or mm-hmm. whatever it's called now, you were leaving.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was dangerous.
This was a moment in real life, and I don't like the fact that they keep making movies, making entertainment out of this. You're welcome to see this one.
It's a tough subject.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It reminds me of Pearl Harbor. Our parents would always tell us about Pearl Harbor and how we should respect and remember that moment, but it was nothing to us. It was just a memory.
Well, Pearl Harbor was also a radio program. I don't think we were watching on television over and over and over and over again.
That is a big difference. But, you know, the Ben Affleck Pearl Harbor movie was just a Ben Affleck movie. It didn't touch me in the same way sure. that these films would if I would see them.
All right, any other?
Okay. Here is our foreign sci-fi noir of the week.
It's talk to us, Steve.
It's currently called Antimatter. It was originally called Worm. It's a study of wormholes. It's a study of...
So like Twin Peaks, uh-huh. there's like a multiverse,
it's
man.
It's a multiverse story. I love a good multiverse story. And this one looks like a fun one. It, again, is kind of foreign. It's one of those Cannes Film Festival award-winning kinds of films that may not be all that great. Reminds me of the movie Primer, which, oh boy, time travel. The concept of really looking deep into time travel. This one is about wormholes and all their dimensions, and I'll probably see this
they
one.
They call it an Alice in Wonderland, man.
It is an Alice in Wonderland.
It's crazy.
The young female scientist goes into another dimension and has an adventure, and Alice in Wonderland certainly comes to mind.
All right, any ones with Antonio Banderas in, Steve?
Antonio Banderas is going to play a rock and roll star who's not very smart in a movie called Gun Shy. He's a rock and roller, reminds me of a Steven Tyler, maybe.
All right.
And his wife gets kidnapped, and he has to do something about it. And
well, there you go. You got that one going for you.
Not quite sure what to do.
Anything else, Steve?
Yeah, the 60-yard line. This is a very weird comedy about a guy who buys a house in the parking lot of Lambeau Field, the home of the Green Bay Packers, and decides that this would be a great place to have parties and have people over, big Packer fans.
A lot of cheese curds.
A lot of cheese curds and a lot of beer, and hilarity ensues from there.
All right, so we got that going for us.
There's that.
And then we also have a documentary, Steve.
Yep.
Let's go to the documentary area.
This is the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, the Beatles album, and there's a documentary this week called It Was 50 Years Ago Today, Sgt. Pepper and Beyond. This looks like a really good story.
Well, if you've been following us, then we got Scott Fryman, mm-hmm. and we've got Deconstructing the Beatles, where he gives lectures on how they record, what was going on in their
history
around the recording of each album. And this one is actually where they interview other people about those same things. So this would be, if you've been following Deconstructing the Beatles with me, this would be a way to rewatch those and get some new stories. They say some other stories are there.
They say there's some other stories.
They always say it.
They always say that. I don't know that they have any new stories that Scott Fryman hasn't shown you already, but this looks like a really interesting documentary.
What I will say, though, is that they've gone to become very human to me.
The Beatles.
Yes. Each of the, you're seeing much more of them as people. And it's very hard. It's, you know, when you know, think of Chicago Bears quarterback or somebody who just gets drafted, all of a sudden they're put on this pedestal, and they're, all of a sudden there's a barrier between you and that person. And enough time has gone by right now that you can sit back and go, oh, this is Paul McCartney as a person. This is what he was really thinking at the time.
That's great.
And anyway, this would be interesting. Steve, television seasons are starting
this week. Fall TV is here. Labor Day is over. Fall is here. Time to watch some TV shows. Well, or in your case, not watch some TV shows.
Well, Star Trek's coming up, Steve. Yes. That's going to be awesome.
Yes, the new Star Trek Discovery is coming out in a couple of weeks. But
I'm not talking about Star Trek, Steve.
Oh.
What are we talking about?
The Orville. On Fox, Seth MacFarlane has made a TV show that is a comedy that is set in a future that looks a lot like Star Trek from the 60s.
What?
And it looks very funny. It looks very irreverent because it's Seth MacFarlane. How could it not be? But he has come out and said that this is the Star Trek that he wants.
All right, so Star Trek, they fly around in the Enterprise. All right, and I did not get this until you explained it to me. Tell me where the name the Orville comes from.
Orville and Wilbur Wright, the Wright brothers who invented air travel.
Of course, that's where it came
That's what the name of this ship comes from, is Orville Wright.
And so that, of course, makes it humorous because it is called the Orville.
Correct. This looked great. I look forward to this. This is coming on Sunday night.
There'll be a lot of green ladies that Seth gets to see.
I think there's going to be a lot of green ladies on the Orville. This is Sunday night, so those of you who are sad because there's no Twin Peaks, there's no Game of Thrones on Sunday night anymore, there's no Doctor Who on Saturdays for a while, now we've got something to watch on Sunday. and we're not watching football. Book it. Brings us to our book it, our book of the week, and you have been learning, man.
All right, so if we could like get into our Zen pose.
All right, Twin Peaks.
Just go ahead and sit down and cross our legs.
Have some cherry pie.
Crisscross applesauce, baby.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to talk a little bit and expand
our
minds.
Slow down the show.
Do we have the lava lamp? It seems to be working just right now.
Excellent.
And the incense is just right in the air.
Incense and peppermints.
The name of this book is The Cosmic Serpent, DNA, and the Origins of Knowledge.
The Cosmic Serpent. What is that code for?
Yeah, man. All right, so this is 1999. This is by Jeremy Narby.
Yeah.
Jeremy is an anthropologist.
PhD level.
PhD. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing this because I was driving down from Chicago area down to Southern Illinois University to go to the Eclipse, man.
And
I needed something to listen to, so Audible set me up, man.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, I'm listening to this this book. And he is an archaeology student, and you know, he's a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was down in Central America, man, talking to, like, the people.
Relating to the people, man.
All right, so he's talking to the people. He's wondering, how do these people, who we consider more primitive, how do they learn all these things about the plants to solve, you know, like this one is for high blood pressure and this one will...
They have solutions to medical problems that are living plants around them.
And so what you immediately find out is that the people who are there are very skeptical about giving away where they get the knowledge, mm-hmm. and what the knowledge is. So you could go down, and you could think of pharmaceutical companies are down there mining the locals and mm-hmm. mining the forest for unique specimens of whatever it is to be able to take back and make pills, make the pills that make you feel good,
mm-hmm.
make the pills that solve your ills.
Right.
Well, this is crazy. So we learn, he tells a lot of story about the history of this, about trying to gain trust of the people to be able to talk to him, about some of the speech barriers. He is he from Montreal?
He's originally from Montreal.
All right, so he speaks French and English, but he's down there speaking Spanish. Well, the people there speak whatever language they are, and they're also speaking Spanish. So you've got this, you know, this barrier for this knowledge. But when you get down to it, it gets really strange, really crazy, man.
Mm-hmm.
These people go through, they're shamans. They basically go through spiritual time where they don't eat, they don't drink, they fast. And maybe they'll take some kind of solution that they've made.
Mm-hmm.
And they go into some kind of daze or haze or whatever.
Trance or whatever it is.
And the knowledge is supposed to come to you, mm-hmm. like the serpent brings it to you, or whatever it is.
Right.
And this is where it gets, like I said, really esoteric. We've got this Western guy who's been trained on how to look at things and to be able to write. And he's dealing with some, potentially knowledge that's much older than he is, that certainly is not coming from, a book where, very much like, I went to school and I studied this for a long time.
Right.
There's one story of this gentleman who was learning these skills and they were using tobacco to do it, and about how he had to teach himself not to get sick by mm-hmm. using tobacco. This is very unique. It's very out there. It's very kind of Indiana Jones-ish in the sense that, he is a person. This belongs in a museum, or this belongs in a pharmaceutical company. and that's not his job. But also trying to come to grasp of that maybe there's a different way to get knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just as amazing as I was reading this or listening to this, where they're like, oh yeah, you can walk through the rainforest, and this is this reminds me of when I went to Guatemala, and the guy said, now this is a Band-Aid, you rub this piece of foliage off and it comes out, and it's this powdery stuff that you put over it.
Amazing.
And this right here is if you get thirsty, you cut this and there's a pint of water in there. This knowledge of where all this stuff comes from, it comes to them, and it's to serve so many of these ailments. It's like I said, it's in many ways, it's where our medicines come from.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely ate this up. This was such a fun story. He was a great writer. He's definitely a professor that would be fun to have because he can talk to you about stuff. I'm sure that people take professors all the time that are not part of their majors, outside of their wheelhouse. And this was definitely part of that. And that's a good reason, man, to come one, man, with the universe.
Take a ride down the eclipse, man.
So if I was Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem,
that's your favorite.
Let's just say that we had a show maybe down in Memphis or something.
There you go.
And we had some time to listen to a book. This would be the type of book that we should listen to, man.
There you go. It's The Cosmic Serpent, DNA and the Origins of Knowledge by Jeremy Narby. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. There's so much news out there this week. Let's talk about almost none of it. One thing that I do want to point out, there are so many amazing people in our country. There's so many amazing people on our planet. One of them, astronaut Peggy Whitson, safely landed on Saturday night, and she is now...
Why is she important? What did she do?
She is now one of the most traveled astronauts on the planet. She has been in space a total of 665 days. She is 57 years old, which is pretty significant. And at 57 years old, she is the world's oldest female astronaut. That's pretty amazing. She's been out in space. She's done spacewalks 10 times, and she has commanded the International Space Station twice. I think it's significant to acknowledge these people who are doing these things.
That is amazing.
And I am amazed by astronaut Peggy Whitson.
Maybe there should be a statue put up somewhere.
I think we should honor the people who are doing things like this. And we don't hear about them very often.
That's amazing. All right. So anything else going on?
Android Oreo was released this week.
That's the operating system.
That is the operating system. Letter O for Android.
And why is that important?
Well, it's a big policy change because normally when a new operating system for Android is released, the carriers, AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile, they have the option of not releasing that operating system to their user base. This one, the day that it came out from Google, it was released for the Google Pixel on Verizon.
All right. So basically what it's saying is like Apple and their iOS, Google has the same cache.
That's right. So me, with my Google Pixel on Verizon, I was able to download this operating system the day that it came out instead of waiting for permission from Verizon, which is a significant change. Google now might be on the same level with Apple in terms of cell phone creation.
I think the issue of this is going to be if Samsung gets the same type of cache.
That's the big question, because Google makes Android and offers it to Samsung. Mm-hmm. Does Samsung get the same treatment from Verizon as Google does?
Or, we will see.
Or are they competitors? Mm-hmm. And if they're competitors, what does that do to the market? That's a big question mark. But I'm happy with Oreo. It's delicious. and it's a nice operating system.
It goes well with a glass of milk.
I do suggest that those of you who are Android users who have Google Pixels on Verizon, download Oreo as soon as you possibly can.
All right, so sports.
Sports!
That's right. College football started last weekend.
Did it?
And yes, and you were absolutely, you were right there.
I was watching Twin Peaks. That's all I've been worrying about this weekend.
All right, so earlier in August, Disney completed their purchase of BAMTech.
Correct.
Which is the service that was started by Major League Baseball. It was designed to be able to broadcast through the internet to your television or anything. You were able to broadcast high definition, and it was going to stream beautifully.
And think of how many different baseball games are happening all at the same time. This should have the capacity to get that signal to whatever users need that.
And what happened this last weekend was it was not working very well for ESPN 3. So ESPN 3 is, if you went through an Apple TV, a Roku, a Fire Stick, or a Fire, you basically pull up the app. And if the show, if the game is not showing in your particular market, let's just say, and the game I was wanting to watch was in North Carolina.
Really? North Carolina?
Interestingly enough. But the locally, we get the, you know, the Penn State versus Nebraska game or something like that. We get the Illinois game, Northwestern game.
That would be logical.
All right. So what happened was you go to the app, and you can watch the other games they're simulcasting.
Right.
And so the beauty of it is maybe there's 20 games going on, and you can choose the one that you want. Well, man, it was just absolutely hanging up. It was not able to be able to show the game consistently. The first few minutes of the game, I said, wow, this technology is amazing. It almost looks like television now. It's, I mean, over the last few years, we went from something that looked like it was being shown on a computer monitor, to something that looked like it was part of your cable service.
Yeah.
So it really looked great, but man, when it didn't work, it did not work.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just our area; it was actually going on across the United States. Facebook and some sites I'm part of, they were all having problems. And they were announcing that they could not get the game to stream.
But the commercials came through fine.
Commercials, of course, did. They, of course they did. They came through really, really well. We got to watch a lot of commercials. And if you've watched any streaming stuff with it's commercials,
same commercials,
you get the same ones. And it's pretty awesome.
Oh, it's frustrating.
Oh, it's awful. Anyway, there are no news stories as of right now, today, that have, of our recording, that have addressed this. So if you go online, you look at ESPN3, streaming challenges, problems. What you end up going is going to a site that says, is it live? I mean, is it online?
Right.
And, you know, if this happened to Hulu or Netflix.
God forbid it happened during Twin Peaks. There would have been an uproar.
Yeah, that's right. If it happened during those times.
Game of Thrones.
You know, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. Somebody would have reported on this. But we have not gotten any reports on the challenges that they've had.
There's so many challenges. And
I recognize we live in amazing times.
Right.
And you can... I had the menu of 30 different games. Right. I mean, I'm complaining.
Right.
But the reality is that the service... should have been up and running, and they're running through some real challenges.
And going forward, those challenges will have to be addressed. If we are going to go to a streaming-only lifestyle, we need to make sure that technology is ready.
And there, that's where we are right now.
Yeah.
So my hope is it improves over the course of the season. I'm assuming it will. Mm-hmm. And I would say in the next 2 or 3 years, there should be no difference.
The good news is that the Chicago Bears are always on regular over-the-air television when they play their games.
You said the word always.
Always. Every game is always broadcast in the Chicagoland area.
Well, the season starts September 10th.
Yes.
At noon. They're going to take on the Atlanta Falcons.
Atlanta Falcons.
At Soldier Field. At
historic Soldier Field. The rest of the NFL season starts on Thursday, September 7th, and we have to wait till Sunday for our Bears.
Well, we may be waiting all season for the Bears.
Oh! Is there a Bears game today? Did anybody tell the players?
Well, we'll be better than we were last season. John Fox is a good coach.
He is.
And the deal is about building the program.
That's right.
So
high hopes.
We'll see. Well, there's always high hopes.
There's always high hopes right before the season starts.
And then there's season...
And then the season starts,
right?
Go Bears. If you are in Chicago this weekend and you're looking for something to do, American Idol is coming to town, and they are holding auditions at McCormick Place on September 11th this weekend.
Being a middle-aged white guy, I don't think they're going to be able to take
they
me.
They don't want you. They don't want me.
But Steve's son, and we got plenty of talented people in our local area.
There's so much talent around here. I've got so many kids who do such great things in the arts that...
I'm trying to think of the gentleman that, I mean, he was only... He's probably 15, 20 miles from our house that did real well. There's probably two of them from right around our area, in the Chicagoland area, that performed.
Chase your dreams, guys. Go out there. Go out to McCormick Place and see what you can do and see what you can achieve. It's not about winning American Idol. It's about the appearance. It's about being in the spotlight.
And what it gives you is that spotlight to get started.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's it.
All right, Steve. Let's get down to the most important part. If you were not going to sing somewhere, maybe you need to do a dance-off somewhere.
It's time for a dance-off. It looks like it's going to be North Korea versus the United States in a dance-off.
Well, that's what that's what Gizmodo basically reported. It said North Korea appears to challenge the U.S. to a dance-off, the latest propaganda video.
Yeah.
And did you see it?
I did. I have watched this video. It's in our show notes. Go to our show notes and click on this video.
All right, so it is a propaganda video. So the idea is to show the might of the North Korean military. And the way they did that were through seeing a bunch of stuff blowing up. And some dancing.
It reminds me of the South Korean Samsung presentations where they do a lot of things on stage to demonstrate phones.
It reminds me of Solid Gold dancers.
mixed with a little bit of Mel Brooks.
Mixed with some stuff blowing up.
Here's some file footage.
And they slowed it down to show the guy like doing his leg splits.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It is amazing. It's amazing.
But we have Vanilla Ice. I just want to let everybody know that we've got Vanilla Ice. And they'll put on Ice Baby, and we've got a whole country that can do it.
Yep. You don't even get that joke. Don't laugh at that joke. That is from the Vanilla Ice movie. He was trying to promote the phrase, yep, as saying yes for cool people.
We're going to whip and nay-nay.
Oh, jeez. That's it. We win. We've got whipping and nay-naying.
Well, this is a very odd video. I encourage you to go to our notes and see it.
Check it out.
Let's just pray for peace.
I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week, man.
I think we can come back. We can keep dancing our way to the stars. That's the way to do it. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can go to our Patreon page, Patreon.com/TooMuchScrolling, and be an executive producer, just like Hillary did this week. Welcome all of our new listeners. It has been a great week.
It has been a great week.
It has been a great week. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Rainbow Mosquito Man.
We'll see you in the future. We don't talk about what I want to talk about.